For hundreds of years, people have derived work from America's natural resources. We have turned vast prairies into food crops, built cities out of stone and wood and clay, tapped the energy of rivers. Some places challenge this ability. They exist at the margins of what's profitable, what's doable, what's physically endurable. They may only be accessible a few months every year. Tonight, we begin a series, Working at the Margins, about three such places and the people who struggle to exploit them. We begin with NPR's Howard Berkus at the Great Salt Lake in Utah.
This is America's Dead Sea, an inland ocean four times saltier than seawater. The locals like to say that only fools and tourists swim and play here. The salty water stings, the beaches smell, there aren't any fish, and boats corrode quickly in this brine. This Great Salt Lake in Utah is a watery desert in a desert. In fact, tumbleweeds float on its surface. Insects and birds swarm here on its shores, but there's little alive in the lake itself. It's a marginal place for almost everything.
Climb on in, close the door, we're on our way. We're in for a little bit rougher ride than usual this morning.
Gusting wind and 4-foot waves make the ride rough on an aluminum boat, a floating tabletop with a tiny cat. Barely big enough for two people, me and Colin McKnight, a Great Salt Lake boatman.
Got the wind coming out of the north, probably won't make it too good today, but we'll see.
Gonna do some fishing today?
Yeah, we're gonna try, see what the wind does. With this chop, it makes it really hard to work.
McKnight is only 20, but he's already spent three seasons on the lake, piloting these flat-top boats in wind, fog, cold, and snow. There's near zero wind chill this February day. So we crowd into the heated cab, bloated by orange Coast Guard survival suits. It's still dark, barely 6 a.m. Dozens of other boats might be out as well, searching in the dark for pinkish clouds on the surface. Clouds of eggs, brine shrimp eggs.
It's just booming. The brine shrimp industry is getting huge.
And why is that?
Money. Lots of money.
Money is the driving force in the brine shrimp business. It drives people to the margins of a place hostile to humans, but rewarding for those stubborn and clever enough to stick with it. People who live on the margins themselves. Nels Niemi is a brine shrimp spotter.
There's about four generations now of people who've worked for people who've worked for people out there on the lake. And it's wonderful to see that because entrepreneurs can grab some equipment, get a couple big bucks investors to put up a couple $100,000, go out and scrape their knuckles out there on this Great Salt Lake and come up with bags of shrimp and sell it, dry it, process it, sell it, and go home millionaires.
Niemi is not one of the millionaires. He's 30 years older than boatman Colin McKnight, but just finished his first season in the brine shrimp business. It's high up on the testosterone scale, he says, along with mountain climbing in the Himalayas, hang gliding at 30,000 feet, and exploring Arctic ice in Greenland. Niemi's done all that and earned degrees in business, economics, and aeronautical engineering. But he prefers to spend his summers guiding rafts on whitewater rivers and his winters guiding shrimpers on the Great Salt Lake.
Yeah, it's the Wild West, but there's a lot of people out there with degrees. People who are misfits. The current in the River of Life takes them out on the Great Salt Lake, and they fit. You bring a bunch of people out there, you run them around on the lake. If they can get to work at 5 o'clock in the morning on time and drive a boat without running over anything, they got a job. And they make plenty of money. It's that way until the 28th of February, and then it's all over.
The season began October 1st when brine shrimp began to lay eggs. They're tiny creatures, better known as sea monkeys, instant pets hawked in comic books, add water and they come to life, with antennae, two protruding eyes, and 11 pairs of hair-like appendages running down a thin body to a taper tail. The Great Salt Lake produces more of them than any place on Earth. Billions every year. It's the biggest source of eggs, 90% of the world market, for fish farms in Thailand, Taiwan, Malaysia, and Ecuador. Eggs are hatched in the farms, then fed to prawns destined for restaurants worldwide. It's another cold and early morning, 5 a.m., 18 degrees. Nels Niemi peers out the window of a Cessna Skyhawk. The lights of the Salt Lake Valley first glitter below, then soon disappear. We're 3,000 feet above the lake. The moon glistens on its surface.
Which first come, first serve?
If you find it, you get a boat on it, it's yours. If you don't get there, or you're 10 minutes late, somebody else will get it, and it might amount to $10,000. It might be more.
To get a competitive edge, shrimp egg spotters like Nels Nimi fish from the air. They search for the pinkish clouds of eggs called streaks and direct boats to them. Egg streaks can be so valuable, they draw prospectors dreaming of golden eggs in 20 planes and 60 boats, five times the fleet of a decade ago. The streaks might be a mile long and 100 feet wide. A day's catch might bring $100,000 or more, if egg can be found.
The problem is to look down through in the dark, pick out the difference between the foam, the tumbleweeds, the dead ducks, and railroad ties, miscellaneous other stuff.
Foam looks like egg streaks from the air. Nimi and his pilot use their radio to direct four boats to what they hope is egg.
So far, I've got lots of foam, and everybody's in the air is complaining about it. There's only 10 airplanes up today, 9 or 10 airplanes. We were about number 4 to come into the fracas here.
It feels like a war zone with all the planes and boats and even F-16s out on maneuvers. Shrimpers scramble their radio signals so competitors can't eavesdrop, but the planes and boats watch each other, and they're all watching the lake, 900 square miles of it. It's often a race when egg is finally spotted.
Well, this is what happens. We got three boats here. That might be, shoot, there's a boat on it. Okay, there's two boats already on it. Damn it, we're gonna lose. Clint, there are boats on the streak. The one, the speeder to your right, to your starboard, is going to get there first. There's a case where by about a minute we lost that egg to the north.
Some companies use speedboats to claim egg. An orange flag establishes the claim and reserves all the egg within 300 yards. That distance is often disputed. There are arguments and threats. A few fights have been reported, a few boats set ablaze. Most shrimpers simply talk it out.
Yeah, this is Nels. You're no way you're 300 yards from us on that slick down there. You're dropping boom. Bill is about 200 yards north of your position. Could you have your boys move south, please? Some of the companies want to be the Oakland Raiders of this outfit, you know, where they are out there pushing everybody around and snarling and getting a lot of points by being the toughest kid in the block.
Competition's so intense because there's so much at stake. $140 million in shrimp eggs last season, a record 14 million pounds, according to the state of Utah. Shrimpers scoff at that, saying they actually make a lot less money, but they're tight-lipped about details. Egg prices do vary widely. The best egg this year fetched seven times the price just 2 years ago. 9 months ago, the market was begging. Now it's glutted and the price is down two-thirds. But whatever shrimpers make isn't easy money.
Okay, so they got boom in the egg, or egg in the boom.
Oh, boom in the egg, too.
Okay, Bill, we're going to come down the streak. I won't waggle the wings where the egg is. I'll just tell you on the radio, over.
We dive down to the lake, close to the surface, following the streak of egg so the boatman knows where to find it.
Right here, Bill. Right here, over. Right here is the good egg. Right into about here is the end of it, over.
Okay, I copy that, Bill.
Down on the lake, the boatman strings an oil-skimming boom into the water. The boom gathers the eggs, then a pump sucks it up into barrel-sized bags on aluminum frames. This is a lot harder than it sounds. Foam, tumbleweeds, and dead ducks can clog the pumps. Wind and waves churn the egg beneath the surface and the booms. Even salinity is a factor. Fresher water disperses eggs, but skilled and lucky shrimpers corral 20,000 pounds on a good day.
No, this business might be out, it might not be existing next year. Yeah, there might not be any egg because of the ecology of Salt Lake might flip-flop, and it might just not be here. Also, we don't have any idea what the sustainable yield on this lake is, none whatsoever. All they know is the egg keeps coming up, and nobody seems to be able to figure out exactly what a sustainable yield is.
658, traffic 11 o'clock.
Biologists confirm this. Little is known about wild brine shrimp, the ecosystem they depend on, or the wild fluctuations in their populations. Despite the uncertainty, the brine shrimp rush escalates.
But it's all just gambling on getting the fat streak. We're going for the big fat one, the best streak with the most amount of egg in it.
Back on the lake, 3-foot waves and steady wind make the big fat streak elusive. Colin McKnight monitors the radio, but Nels Niemi in the spotter plane isn't finding much egg. At risk in this gamble is more than a wasted day. One pilot once flew his plane right into the lake because the water reflected the sky. He couldn't tell the difference between lake and sky. Boats get in trouble too, like the night swells here were 5 to 6 feet and the salty water was 30 degrees.
One company did flip a boat. It's pretty wild.
What happens then?
You die. If I flipped on a boat, I don't want to be dragged out of here half alive. If I go in, I'm dead. In waves like this, you're gone if you fall in.
Nobody's died recently because other boats fished them out quickly. And most boaters, pilots, and spotters wear survival suits. The danger doesn't discourage newcomers to shrimping. The fleet gets 20 more boats next season, including boats built for herring and bass and boats from Alaska and California. Even more people want in, but the state's imposing restrictions. The flat-top boat we're on bobs wildly, bouncing us around in the tiny cabin.
Yeah, I'd say they're getting some bigger ones rolling in here.
It's getting worse.
Well, I've given up. I'm slowly coming in.
I figured that would happen.
With the other boats and spotter plane giving up on the day, we slowly head back to shore. McKnight suggests we take the boat to a freshwater bay to flush the engine and wash down the deck. The salt, he says, is a powerful corrosive. This lake is hard on everything. This is Howard Berkus reporting.